And welcome back once again to the Parish of the Patriots. This is the 346th installment. 350 will be here before you know it. I'm glad you could join us today. I'm anticipating a lengthy discussion in our Christian-specific segment. I know that's roughly the halfway point of the show. We're going to get into a little earlier this week because I can already tell you we're going to run long. I know this just, I've already sat down. I have a good idea of what we're going to discuss, and I know that that's going to take a little time, but I want to get through the whole thing. I don't like having to break things up into multiple parts. I like to keep the continuity. So we're going to get into that a little earlier this week. And with that, we're probably still going to run long. I just forewarn you, I always like this show to stay right at an hour because, you know, longer than that, you start losing people's interest. It starts, I know, you know, like I'll see something, I'll be scrolling through YouTube stuff, you know, on different topics that I'm interested in that don't have anything to do with politics or, you know, what we discuss on the show necessarily, just random things I find interesting. But I'll look and I'll like, man, that might be interesting. I'll look on, I'll hover over it, you know, and it'll show like 2 hours and 35 minutes. And I'm like, I don't even try it. I ain't got time for that shit. I sit there and listen to nobody for no 2 hours. Ain't nothing that interesting. So I do like, to me, an hour is about the maximum length anybody's going to stay interested. We're going to get a little long. And when you hover over it and see that it's a little long today, I hope you'll at least try to stick with it. If nothing else, skip through and at least listen to the Christian specific segment, because I think that's the most important part. If you do get something out of the show, don't be shy to pay those tithes. We do have snail mail. That's it. Look on our page here for Parish of the Patriots. Look at each episode. You have the description. Most people probably don't read it. You're either going to listen to the show or you're not. But at the bottom of that description page, you've got the snail mail address. If you want to, if you get something out of the show and want to throw a little something my way, that's what I got. I got snail mail. That's it. Don't ask me about cryptocurrency. I don't have that. I got snail mail. That's it. And then we do the listener supporter mailbag from there, which this week is nothing. So we can just, that works out because we're going to run long as it is. So we don't have a listener supporter mailbag. So see, we keep the show on the road. I saw a story earlier. Well, I guess it was last week. It was about Japan. You know, Japan's kind of in the news because they just elected this latest woman prime minister. I always hate it whenever, you know, you hear about some country and it's like, oh, they just elected this, you know, more nationalist right-wing politician, and 9 times out of 10 it's some woman, and you know what you're gonna get. It's like, how did Maloney work out in Italy for you? You know, you anytime you get, you hear, oh yeah, though, this is, she's like Shinzo Abe, you know, you look at this woman and it's like, you got the woman politician. I mean, anything's going to be better. They're not necessarily going to be on the Kajakalas level of shit tier, but you're going to get shit tier. I'm sorry. You just are. I can't take a woman politician as going to be, oh, she's going to be hardcore. She's going to turn the country around. But anyway, I was reading this article about the challenges Nihon is facing right now, that their prime minister is facing. And it, I don't even remember where I read it. It might have been on RT. It wasn't like, you know, a mainstream Western media publication, as I recall, because I don't read a whole lot of that. But I found it really amazing because they were talking about the challenges the new prime minister is facing, which those challenges are limited because at the end of the day, like Germany, Japan is a occupied vassal state of the U.S. So their prime minister can only make so many decisions. They can keep trading these people out all they want, you know, but unless their prime minister is just going to call America's out and say, y'all get the hell out of my country. We're not cooperating with you anymore. Your soldiers aren't allowed out on our streets. Just get out. We know how that would turn out, and it's not going to happen. But unless that happens, they're just going to do what they're told. They're just a figurehead in a lot of ways. They can make a few small decisions concerning their country, but for the most part, they're going to get what they're told by America. Simple as. It's interesting because, you know, after World War II, they made them make this constitution that basically said, unless somebody actually shows up and invades them besides the U.S., you know, they're not allowed to even hardly have a military. And now all of a sudden that's being changed to where now they can even preemptively attack somebody. Well, why? Because the U.S. plans to use them as their Asian Ukraine. Maybe use them to take all the whipping like Ukraine takes from Russia. You take the whipping from China. But in this article, they were talking about the challenges Japan faces. And, you know, I hate this viewpoint that all that constitutes country now is GDP, is just some kind of economic zone. You know, they were talking about Japan's economic problems and she wants to revitalize and really get their economy going. But you see, that's going to be very difficult because of their demographics. It always comes back to this demographic. And the person writing who wrote this article, they all come back to the same thing. If they want to get their GDP up and they want to, you know, really bolster their economy, that's going to be hindered by their demographics. And the solution is always the same. Immigrants. This person's opinion was Japan isn't going to have much of a chance turn their economy around unless they do something about their demographics. And the only answer to your demographics are immigrants. You're supposed to ignore that quote unquote solution has played out in quite a number of countries in Western Europe. And we can see the results of that. There are plenty of studies out that show that immigrants are a mass or drain on the economy, not a bolster. What are they going to do? Sell Japan on they're going to pay the pensions like Merkel tried to do in Germany? But that's always the answer. Immigrant, it doesn't matter. It's always the answer. They're going to have to let immigrants in. The problem is Japan doesn't want to let immigrants in. They're going to have to. The only answer is immigrants. They never address the cause of the demographics, you know. You always notice that it's just like, whoop, you know, it's just like getting hit with a hurricane. These things just happen. Well, you didn't have this problem before. Why are you having it now? They never talk about that. They just want to talk about making the line go up, which means you need immigrants. Of course, that doesn't work, even if that is your goal. You know, how well are bringing all the immigrants in? How well has that worked for Germany? Yeah, how's their economy looking these days? They don't want you to look at that. They always present you these opinion pieces, these stories in a vacuum. You're supposed to just listen to what they're saying because they sound like an expert. You know, you're supposed to go, well, we can see where they did that in Germany. And honestly, it doesn't look like it's worked real well. The UK is not exactly turned into an economic powerhouse now, have they? And yet they still present the same only answer, more immigrants. Some of the dead giveaways here are the contradictions. They say, well, you know, because there's a labor shortage. They always say that. One of the things Japan faces because of their demographics is there's a labor shortage. And people can't afford to own a house. And you stop a minute and you go, wait a minute, the two can't be true. If there's a labor shortage in an actual market, here's the thing. You don't have an actual market. They want you to think you do, but you don't. Whether you're in Japan, America, Britain, or wherever, it doesn't matter. You don't have a market. Because if you did have a market, and there is indeed a labor shortage because of your demographics, then that means you have a bunch of empty houses, and you should have businesses competing for the limited amount of labor available, which should be driving wages up. And if wages are driven up, that means women don't have to work anymore. They can stay home and raise children. And if they can stay home and raise children because the husband now can make plenty of money to go buy one of these empty houses because the old people are dying off. And you see where I'm getting? They can have more children because he's making all this money because he's inundated with job offers every day because every company needs his work. And because now women can stay home, they'll raise more children. And ultimately in a generation, the labor shortage starts balancing out because now you have more kids. You've turned the demographics around. In other words, demographics should just be a cyclical thing. Except you're not getting that, are you? Because they constantly fight to keep the cost of labor down. because that's what the corporations want. The corporations want to keep that cost of labor down so they can keep their profits high. This is why I don't think corporations should be allowed to exist. I think they're an abomination. I don't have a problem with businesses growing, but I, you know, the reason they, the argument for incorporating for corporations is that any business that grows organically will hit a ceiling and they just can't grow anymore unless they incorporate. See, I think that's where it should stop. I don't mean that the government should say no business can be bigger than this. I mean, the government should not allow incorporating because they will hit that ceiling organically and it'll just be that's as big as they can get now. The corporations want to keep the cost of labor down. If they have a labor shortage, then these people should be making so much damn money that their wives can just stay at home. They can live off the husbands. If you have a demographic problem, then that means there's a bunch of empty housing. How come people have to work their asses off these ridiculous hours? And in Japan, their work schedule is insane. And they can't afford a house still. That doesn't make any sense. There's a contradiction. It's a contradiction because they're lying. They're pushing a narrative. And the answer is always the same. You need more immigrants. How about you toss out the feminism? How about you let the cost of labor go up and quit artificially suppressing it and force these companies to compete with one another to raise the price of labor? How about that? Then people could earn a living. Then they could buy a house. Then they could have more kids. And look, in a generation, your demographics are solved organically. No, no, no. You need Indians to come in. You need more immigrants. Because that's worked well everywhere else it's been tried. You're supposed to look at this and not look outside. Oh, no, in Japan, it'll totally work. Even though it didn't work in Germany, the UK, France, anywhere. Where the hell, anywhere else it's been tried. It's not work, but that's always their answer, isn't it? More immigrants. And what the hell is the economy? In a lot of these virtually all of these Western countries, the US, Japan, they point to the stock market. If the corporations are doing great and stock prices are high, that means the economy's good, right? Who gives a shit about that, really? What would you rather have, dear listeners? What would you rather have? Stock market at all-time high and living the way you are where you can't hardly afford food and transportation, you have to drive a shitty old car or whatever? Or would you rather have the stock market has gone down and is mediocre and stagnant, but your cost, your standard of living, rather, has gone up? The corporations can't rake in massive profits anymore, but guess what? You got a job that actually pays a living wage, and your wife can stay home and raise your kids and tend to your home, raise your family. Which would you rather have? Oh, the stock market. What is the economy? Why is the economy always defined as corporate profits? You see, they present the false narrative and then come up with their bullshit excuses. More immigrants. More of their BS solutions, rather. More immigrants. That'll fix it because we're all just interchangeable units. It doesn't matter if Japan is populated by Japanese or if they're populated by Indians. It's the same thing. What does that Nikkei look like? What does that stock market look like? That's all that matters. Of course, we all know Japan won't be Japan if it's populated by Indians. It's just not. That's the reality. They want us to think of these things. Just we're all just mindless cogs in the machine. I think one of the reasons they're so desperate to get to Japan on this immigrant thing is because the longer Japan is allowed to go on and not do that, and they've held out way longer than most of us thought they would, the longer Japan is able to hold out and not bring immigrants in, the more it's going to shine the light of how foolish and what a lie the immigrant thing has been everywhere else. You know, the doomsdaying over demographics is bullshit. Demographics are a cyclical thing. You can fix them in a generation. That quick, that simple. As I read a deal a while back, someone pointed out there's more Japanese now than there's ever been. There's more Japanese than there were 50 years ago. There's more of them now than there have been. They go on and on about demographics. Yeah, a lot of the population's old. That's true. But not all the population. The cost of living, People should be making more money. There's more empty houses as the old people die out. People, housing should be no issue. No. You can fix it in a generation. Easy as. And the longer Japan goes on resisting the immigrant thing, the more that lie is going to become undeniable, this trying to sell immigrants as the answer, the more ludicrous that's going to become. In other words, Japan cannot be allowed to serve as an example of what happens when a country doesn't do that. That's why they're so desperate to push the immigrant thing on Japan. Because, of course, when it doesn't work and it blows up and it becomes a shithole, like it Germany is a shithole, Spain's a shithole, France is a shithole, the UK's a shithole, the US is a shithole. You can't have this one shining example where they didn't do that and they're not a shithole. They got to have them do that too. And that way, when people stand up angry and say, our countries are a shithole now, they can shrug their shoulders and go, well, we don't know why. Who could have predicted it? We don't know. They don't want you asking questions. Why do they hate homogenous populations so much? You know? I saw a deal this morning that apparently in Denmark, the government is running ads showing like a white couple together. And then some expert shows up and stops and basically lectures them on that's inbreeding. You need to be mating with the foreigners, with the immigrants. That way, otherwise you're inbreeding and you're going to have disease and stuff. Two white people together? That's disgusting. You need to go mate with the immigrants. And it's not just, you know, it's not just white people because you see them targeting Japan the same way. They hate homogenous populations. Except in Israel, by the way. That's kind of weird, isn't it? Everybody else has to have immigrants and diversity. In Israel, what diversity they have, they're currently genociding them because they publicly have an ethno state. But that's evil everywhere else, whether it be Japan or in Europe or in America. Weird how that is, isn't it? Person didn't know any better. You would think the goal might be to dumb down the overall IQ, the collective IQ of the population, so that a tiny, I don't know, elite clique of people can just run everything and no one will question it. Anyway, I thought that was something. It's always the same answer. They don't ever have anything new. And they say, oh, well, that's crazy conspiracy talk. But if this is just happenstance. But if it's not a conspiracy, then pray tell, how come they always only have the same answer? How come they can't ever see, all these experts can't ever come up with anything besides the same answer? You need more immigrants. You're just going to have to replace your people. They're not reproducing. Heaven forbid the corporations have to pay people more money and give them better working conditions. We can't have that. My gosh, what would that do to the stock market? The only answer, more immigrants. Just can't help but to keep noticing. You gotta keep noticing. It just, you see it for what it is. They can call you a kook and a conspiracy theorist, and they always say you're promoting dangerous ideas. It's the truth. We just look at these things in the light of the truth, and they can't deny it. The truth is what it is. You know, if we're incorrect, fine. Show us where we're incorrect, but I don't see them offering any other explanations. Remember when Hungary came up with a alternate, we're just going to pay people more incentives to have kids, and they acted like, oh, that's crazy. It's too expensive. Meanwhile, Germany and all these other countries took in the immigrants, and they're hemorrhaging money supporting these immigrants because most of them are on welfare. When Hungary said, well, we'll just pay couples more money, tax incentives from the government, the more kids they have. That'll fix our demographics. That's crazy. You can't afford that. You got to bring in immigrants. Meanwhile, Germany's hemorrhaging money supporting all these immigrants on welfare that were supposedly going to pay the pensions. Remember that big lie. Anyway, it's worth pointing out the truth. You call these liars for what they are. You know, they present the same old pre-canned solutions to the problems they create, and they won't allow things to fix naturally. These things, demographics are no big deal. I know everybody, oh, demographics is destiny. Oh, oh, your demographics. If, yes, that's true, as long as someone's got their thumb on the scale. If they'd step back and let things develop normally, they would self-correct. But they don't want you thinking about that. The only answer is more immigrants. Same answer every time. But I'm sure that's pure coincidence. I want to get into the Christian specific segment. As I said, I know we're going to run long today, so I don't want to run too long. And we got a lot to get into in the Christian specific segment. So you know what to do. Without further ado, get in there, fill those pews. Let's get into this week's sermon, this week's discussion in our Christian specific segment here at the Parish of the Patriots. Now, I thought for this week, it might be an interesting and fun discussion to go through and look at the various stages of life, of course, from our Christian perspective, but also in comparison, because it's a matter of choices, and you have these various choices in life. So we're actually going to be looking also as for what these choices are for the non-believer as well. Now, obviously, people have individual choices for them to make personally, but really on a grander scheme, it's the same choice. It may have a different topic. In other words, it may have a different topic as far as what the choice is, but ultimately it comes down to, you know, are you going to choose to seek and wisdom, knowledge, and understanding and seeking to know the Lord, or are you going to go off into the things of the world and basically waste your time? I find this interesting. We'll get into all of this because I find this interesting because there's a difference in decision. You have individual decision making and then you have collective decision making. We'll get into that as we go through our different stages in life because I, of course, think of life as a marathon. The Apostle Paul kind of uses the same reference. And I think it is the easier way to kind of break it down because we do. We do go through these definite stages of life and they have their ups and downs. They have there's advantages. There's certain things you can only enjoy in certain stages of your life. But then there's also downsides. Now, we all start off life in the womb. I mean, we go to the very beginning. You start off in the womb. None of us remember that. But if you think about it, you the womb is the ultimate. You just basically don't worry about anything. Everything's provided for you. You get your nutrition. Everything is just, you're oblivious to the outside world or that it even exists. When you think of this life in general as kind of in the womb too for the spiritual life, you know, in a lot of ways, a lot of people are completely oblivious to the world outside. In other words, if this world is nothing more than a womb that we're nurtured in, a second stage womb, like an infant in the womb, a lot of people are completely oblivious that there's a whole nother world and that this is actually real small. From an infant's perspective, the mother's womb is their entire world. That's how small their world is. They're completely oblivious of what's going on outside, whether they're in danger, whether they're, you know, any of it. They're just there. And in a lot of ways, you can compare that to this life itself. We are in the womb. We are nurturing and being nurtured and developed for the real life to come. That whole wide eternal world, time doesn't exist. So, And like I say, a lot of people wind up being completely oblivious that there's a whole world out there. They really think this is it. And in a lot of ways, it's no more ridiculous than if an infant were to think his mother's womb was the entire world. There's nothing out there. It's a crazy conspiracy theory. Now, I always imagined that if an infant had a choice, they would stay in the mother's womb forever. They would. It's cozy in there. You don't have any responsibilities. You're just... Your world is small and cozy. And if given a choice, they would stay in there. But of course, they're not given a choice. They're birthed out into this world. Very violent process when you think about it. You know, babies' heads when they're born are all misshapen because they get mashed and squirted out there into the world. First thing that happens, some doctor smacking you on the ass. Dude, that's your introduction. That's an infant's clue of what this life is. You get birthed out. Some complete stranger yanks you up by the ankle and knocks the crap out of you. So you'll start crying because after all, that's the initiation. And this is just a sign of things to come. Things are so nice and cozy in the womb. But guess what? All that's over now. You get to start off your journey in the world. Then everybody goes through childhood, your children. This gets a little bit confusing because, no, not confusing, but the period of life of childhood, you know, they've tried to expand that. You have people that are like 20-something years old and they still acting like children. Their parents still treat them like they're children. But childhood traditionally, you know, is a pretty short period of time in your life. As a child, when you're a child, the upside of that is you have no responsibility, really. I mean, aside from, you know, learning basic, you know, decorum, how to behave, or at least that's what you should be. You see some people's kids and they ain't even learning that. The upside is you don't really have a lot of responsibility. Your parents take care of everything. As a child, you're not running around worrying about how to pay the bills or any kind of responsibilities outside of maybe on Wednesdays you're supposed to take the trash or do the dishes two nights a week. You still basically should have everything provided for you. You have very little responsibility aside from some basic tasks and learning how to function in the world, learning how to behave around other people, how to work with others, you know, playing on the playground as kids. You are on a very basic level learning that you have to work with others. You're going to have to be around other people. You learn that there's people in this world that you're not going to get along with, that you don't like for whatever reason. You start learning all of these lessons in childhood, but you don't have the responsibility of, you know, well, what am I going to fix for supper? Am I going to have food? How am I going to pay the bills? How do I get from here to here? That's things that wait for you in adulthood. But as a child, your life is dictated to you. Somebody else tells you when you get up. Someone else tells you when you go to bed. Someone else tells you what you're having for supper, whether you like it or not. Your life is very much controlled. You don't have the responsibilities of worrying about paying bills or how to provide food or whatever, but you're dictated to. You don't have any real meaningful freedom as a kid. I mean, you have freedom if you're allowed to go out and play, but you don't have any real freedom. You don't get to decide for yourself because you lack that ability. Somebody else makes the decisions. I mean, even on basic things, you know, what time you're going to get up, that you got to go to church this Sunday. You don't want to go to church this Sunday. You got to go to school. You don't want to go to school. In that instance, the children may actually be more well aware than the parents as far as school. But, you know, the point is, while you don't have a lot of responsibility, the downside is you don't even get to make really any sort of meaningful decisions for yourself. You're dictated to, you're controlled. Every aspect of your life, for the most part, is controlled and decided by others. Now, after childhood, you move into this next stage. The more modern term would be adolescence. We used to call them young adults. But as a part of this whole thing where they're trying to extend childhood later and later into people's lives, we have this adolescence term. That term used to not even exist. The concept of people being a quote-unquote adolescent, not that long ago, no one even had a, you know, we didn't have that term. Now they're extending quote unquote adolescence into people like 28 years old. Oh, he's still an adolescent. No. We used to call these young adults, but we're talking about once your hormones start, puberty hits, that's where you're transitioning into being a young adult / adolescence. We'll go ahead and use adolescence here so we all are on the same page. Even though, like I said, I'm not real big on that term because it's a fairly modern invention and they keep using it to try to keep people locked into a form of childhood. Because again, you say, well, why do they do that? Because if you look at what we just discussed, for children, everything in their life is dictated to by their parents. When the authorities, when the government extends this idea of adolescence as being a part of childhood, what? You're supposed to continue to be dictated. So you have 25-year-olds who are still quote-unquote adolescents, a.k.a. children. So it's just natural that instead of their parents, now the government dictates to them. They're still supposed to be conditioned. This is not by accident, I believe, because revolutions tend to come from the young people. Well, if you have the young people's locked in a state of eternal childhood, so as to speak, and in surrendering their decision-making to others, then they're not going to be stirring up any revolutions. They're not going to be trying to topple and overthrow the system. Again, that energy, that revolutionary energy always comes from the young people. So it makes sense that they would want to keep them locked into a childhood man's mindset. I'll be able to talk here, man. I'll finish the second cup of coffee. Locked into a childhood mindset where they're programmed to just continue to be told what to do, when to do, what's allowed, what isn't allowed, and to just accept it as a child. Now, again, a child is supposed to accept that a young adult is not, for certain, not somebody in their 20s. So we can see why they encourage this continual extension of adolescence as a part of childhood so that you'll just be comfy. Do what you're told. You hear these things like, you know, universal basic income where the government will take care of you. This is a part of this. This is who they're marketing it to. We'll give you everything you need, but like a parent dealing with a child, you'll be told what to do. You don't have to worry about making any decisions. We'll make those for you. We'll take care of you. Just be an eternal child. And there's far too many people more than willing to glom on to that. Now, one of the things that really sets adolescence off is this is where a man, a young man, first gets introduced into responsibility. And I mean real responsibility as in making choices, making decisions. And some of these decisions are going to carry over into the rest of your life. And it's I think this is the most vulnerable, the most precarious time of a person's life because you don't have any experience, so to speak. And you've got these hormones raging that you've never experienced before. And your body's going through these changes, which leads to not making real clear decisions. You don't have a lot of experience to draw on. And some of the decisions you make can potentially set you on the path of what the whole rest of your life is going to be. You look at people whose lives are a wreck, and I believe a lot of times you can trace that back to having roots in their adolescence, into when they really just started their young adult lives with the hormones raging and things such as this. Young men in this stage of their life, in adolescence, this is the common area. This is the most, what do I want to say, the most obvious area where homosexuals will target because their hormones are all out of whack. They're experiencing things that they've not experienced before. This is how homosexuals reproduce. They will target these people, and when they're not thinking clearly, they're being dictated to by their hormones. If they can be coerced into experiencing some of that, it can plant that seed. I remember several years ago, that topic came up of homosexuals targeting these adolescent boys. And there was like all of this online, people acting like, you know, aghast of this. And it's like, I thought everyone knew this. I thought everyone was aware that this is basically how homosexuals reproduce, is they target these guys. And the point here is that's to get them to make decisions that can veer them a certain direction in life. That doesn't mean, by the way, that if you go through an experience like that, that you have to. You still have the ability to make your decisions of how you deal with it. You know, someone might come to you and introduce that to you as a young man, but you still have the power to say, okay, well, that happened, but I'm going to go ahead and move on. That's not how I want to live my life. I want to live, say, to serve the Lord. I want to know the Lord. I want to seek wisdom and understand. That happened. It's over. It's gone now. I'm going to move forward this other direction. They know this. Why do you think this society works so hard to encourage people to instead say, oh no, this is who you are. Surrender to it. You're just denying your own identity. No. Embrace it. This is who you are. You know, we're going to have a whole month to celebrate this lifestyle, this dead-end lifestyle. Celebrate it, embrace it. It makes you special. It makes you who you are. You shouldn't try to improve yourself and say, maybe that's not the path I want to take. No, that's who you are. You can't help it. You were born that way. Never mind. That thought never entered your mind until you were approached by your scoutmaster, Sunday school teacher alone, and introduced to things that you should never have been introduced to. Remember, one of the key elements of things from the devil is a choice has to be involved. You know, a choice has to be involved. And that's how this system is basically works, is you have a choice, you know, and you can choose other. We all make bad choices. Everybody does. Everybody will continue to do so at times in this life, but you can make different choices. Now, to stick with this adolescent stage of our lives, you know, a lot of our paths start going in certain directions. You can alter those, but this is where you really get started off in life, because you're now making some decisions for yourself. They're not being dictated to you by your parents. You're making choices. You know, were you going to do this? Are you going to be this type of person? And you're trying to sort that out. And in the midst of all that, you have all these hormones going on, and you have all this messaging being beamed at you through the media and things. I feel really sorry for young people today because of the level of social media and the internet and all of it. It's very, very difficult to navigate through. I saw a story recently, and y'all probably did too, to where, like, you know, remember a couple years ago when they were really pushing the trans thing, the trans kids, and they were claiming this ridiculous huge number of trans teenagers. Well, I saw another story now the other day. That number has plummeted. You know, it's plummeted back down, you know, way down from what they were trumpeting from the rooftops just a few years ago. And I thought, okay, well, what about the young people who were victim to that a couple of years ago that started taking hormone blockers or the, you know, opposite hormones that they're supposed to have, that screwed up their whole system because for basically what amounted to as a fad? What about them? We're just supposed to brush them off now? You know, these people had their lives ruined. It was encouraged by the system and it was encouraged by the media. And, oh, well, that's not a thing anymore. You know, if you're a young woman and you cut your breasts off, tough luck, I guess. Now you realize maybe that wasn't the greatest idea. You have a situation to where now young people, adolescents, are supposed to start making decisions for themselves, yet you have all of this influence. It really is an operation where the devil tempts you because you still have a choice, but you have this megaphone of satanic messaging from the media and whatnot telling you, oh yeah, you want to embrace sin. That's for sure. Because the devil knows that this also is where a lot of people get set off in life. And some people are never able to get back off of that path. You still can make the decision, but the longer you stay on a road, the further it is to get back on track. And if you can get started off on the wrong road, less likely you're going to get on the right road. The devil knows this. So you're supposed to be making decisions for yourself, but they've got a megaphone blasting you, telling you to make these decisions. You ever notice there's no, by pure coincidence, the media, government, they never blast people with positive messaging that they should walk a life of seeking wisdom and understanding and knowledge of the Lord. Never. It's always you should embrace sin. And people will think it's hyperbole when we talk about this satanic system that we live under. But yet, the evidence is all around us, isn't it? They never blow from the rooftops that you need to overcome sin and seek a path of the Lord. This is going to bring you happiness. This is going to bring you a more fulfilling life. No, it's always sin. It's always, if you go follow sin, this is where you're going to find happiness. This is where you're going to find fulfillment and contentment. And it's a lie. It's proven to be a lie time and time again. But this is the messaging every single time. And it's louder and more prominent than it's ever been before. How is that? If it's just pure coincidence, then how come once in a while they don't give a different message? Now, as I often think about this life as a marathon. Childhood and adolescence is like the beginning of a marathon. You're running, say, a 10-mile marathon. And when you first start off that race, it's really the last thing you're thinking about is the finish line, because it's so far off. You're just trying to find your pace. You know, if you've ever run a long race, if you've ever done any long distance running, when you first get started off, you're not thinking about the finish line. You're trying to find your pace. You're trying to find that pace to where you know you can make the distance, and you're trying to find your stride. You're trying to get started, but you're not really thinking about the end of the race because it's too far off. You can't be worrying about that. If you think about it too much, it's too daunting. You see, all you can think about is how far it is and can you really do this? Likewise, in childhood, adolescence, you're not thinking about the end of things. That's too far off. You're just trying to find your pace. You're trying to find your stride, what you need to do, where you need to be, how you're going to live. Now, after adolescence comes adulthood. This is the biggest part of your life is we're just going to use the general term adulthood. This is the meat of the marathon. This is the mile after mile after mile. You're not thinking how far you've been or how far you've got to go. You're just looking right ahead of you, concentrating on your breathing, concentrating on maintaining that same pace, not worrying if people are going past you or you're passing other people. You're in the zone. You've set off on your life. You start the hormones from adolescence have calmed down now. They've leveled out. And you're going through the meat of your life. This is where the years start rolling by. Most people have a job now. They've got a job. And you just go through. Go to work every day. You go home. You go through this routine. Routine sets in. You go through your routine. And the days are going by. Most of your time that you're allotted in this life are going to be spent in this stage, the meat of the middle. This is where some of those choices beforehand or how you choose to live your life, the sooner you make this choice, really come into play. If you've decided, you know, I'm going to seek to understand and know the Lord. I'm going to seek wisdom and understanding, you know, and in the Bible, the book of Proverbs is very invaluable for this, especially the very first part, because he speaks about the wisdom, you know, how seeking, you know, wisdom, knowledge, and understanding is directly related to understanding the Lord, getting to know God. And the sooner you can do that, the more time you can spend through that exercise. You know, this is how you live your life. This is why adolescence is such a important time and so much energy is spent by the enemy to make sure people get off on the wrong foot. Because if you get off on the right foot, that the sooner you start dedicating your heart and your life seeking wisdom and understanding, knowledge of the Lord. And you go through your life doing that, those things, whether you're going off chasing sin or you're seeking wisdom, knowledge, and understanding of the Lord. Now, obviously, our lives are made up of a lot of little decisions. You make decisions every day. Some of them are not very big decisions, and some of them are bigger than others. Some of them have lasting meaning, and some of them seem largely irrelevant. But we're making these decisions every day, and it's on us. I grow so tired. One of the things that really wears me out about evangelical types is they act like God is micromanaging their lives. They try to offload their responsibilities for decision-making off onto God. You know, everything is, why is God doing this? Why did God bring this about? Why is God doing this? Why is God? That's just life. God is not sitting there messing with you. When you have a bad run of luck, more than likely, that's just life. It's not God is messing with you. That's just life. Guess what? Everyone else is going through the same thing. You make your decisions. Quit trying to offload that responsibility on God. I always make the joke about, you know, these people that they stub their toe and it's like, why did Jesus do this to me? You just stubbed your toe, Brian. Now, as you go through this meat of the middle life, you know, if you're seeking to know the Lord, look, that doesn't mean you're not going to sin, obviously. The difference is, you know, recognizing it, continuing to try to improve, to gain more wisdom, knowledge, and understanding, and working through that versus those that are on the other path that just wallow in it. You know, they just embrace it. They just wallow in sin, and that's all they care about. Now, you know, we're not just talking about, you know, physical lust. It can be lusting after money, people that dedicate themselves after wealth and material hedonism, materialism. The sinful path can be made up of a lot of things. It can be sexual degeneracy, or it can be, you know, the love of money. It can be materialism. You know, there's a lot of aspects, but what they have in common is what you're not doing. The Lord is of no consequence to you. You don't care anything. You don't believe in any of that. Or if you do, it's just a passing whatever, maybe. It is of no importance to you. It's not a priority. What's a priority for you is the things of this world. So, you know, don't just think, oh, well, you know, I'm not a homosexual, so this doesn't mean me. No, it can be a lot of things, pursuit of a lot of different things. The commonality is that the last thing on your list of things you care about is the Lord. You don't really care about God. That's just a trivial. Maybe those people are onto something. I don't know. I'll worry about that later. I got more important things. I really want to buy this new big screen TV that I really don't need. You know, I got to make some more money. Did you hear what that asshole at work said about me? I got to get back at him. A man of God is seeking to understand, to gain wisdom. I've really come to realize, and again, this is highlighted in the first part of the book of Proverbs, you know, how interrelated wisdom and understanding are with God himself. If you want to know God, seek wisdom, seek understanding, because as you gain those things, you will, you know, by a consequence of that, you will come to understand God. It will make more sense to you. And you go through and you do your best to really put in that effort to seek and understand God. And like all things, these things become a habit. It becomes a way of life. You're going through your life and you have a mindset of trying to gain wisdom, understanding, knowledge of the Lord. You want to know God. You want to figure out what God is doing. What's he doing? What's his plan for my life? What does any of these things mean? Likewise, the life of sin becomes a habit. You know, this sin isn't enough, so you do more. You're not making enough money at your job, so when you get that opportunity to cheat somebody, why not? my goodness, you live in this society, you look at the people at the very, very top, and they're the biggest scumbags in the world. You know, they might have $1 billion in the bank. And if they seen a kid drop his lunch money, they're going to put their foot over it and then pick that thing up and stuff it in their pocket. When you have this example of people who will do anything for money, that means you should do anything. That's what success is, right? You see a lot of this in people trying to become some form of celebrity. Literal nobodies on TikTok or Facebook or whatever. And you see them and they try to be some sort of celebrity on their TikTok channel. This pursuit, because this messaging has gotten to them that to be somebody in this society, in this world, you've got to be some form of celebrity. Well, nobody's going to come knocking on their door and ask them to be the next big actor, actress, singer, whatever. So they try to do it themselves. They try to become an internet celebrity. I see these terms, you know, they write these stories when we do Daily Mail Monday, and I'll see some story about TikTok influencer. Well-known social media influencer. I literally don't know who any of these people are. But they're somebody. And that message sinks in, and this is what they spend their time pursuing. Some people like this. This is what they're pursuing. That's why I say this pursuit of worldly things has a commonality in that the Lord is the last thing any of these people are thinking about. If they could just hit 1 million views or 1 million followers, if their latest TikTok will just go viral, then their life will be a success. And it doesn't matter, even if those things happen, that success is never what they think that is or what they think it's going to be. Why? Because we know the devil's a liar and a murderer. Of course he lies. He tells you life's going to be great. If you just do this, it never turns out. But you see, the time is going by. This is the big middle. This is where you are going to spend the vast majority of the time in your life is in the meat of the middle. The middle of the marathon, you're in your stride, whether that stride is seeking wisdom, knowledge, and understanding of the Lord or pursuing sin. This is, you're in your stride, and this is your life is going by. And the longer you spend it pursuing these things, the more natural that becomes. It becomes a habit, and the last thing that crosses your mind is doing something different. As you're pursuing these worldly sinful things, you're not thinking about, hey, maybe this isn't for me. Maybe I should be spending some time about, you know, learning about Jesus. No, because now you're used to this path. And we're constantly, again, we're making those decisions. We're making those choices. We're making those decisions. We're moving along. Now, after the meat of the middle part of our lives, you get into the final stretch. This is where I'm at now. I'm old enough. I consider myself in the final stretch of my life. If I live, you know, at my age, you know, I'm in my late 50s. You know, 20 years is nothing. You know, you ask a 25-year-old, how long is 20 years? It might as well be eternity, because 20 years ago, from their reference point, they were only 5 years old. That seems like a long time. When you're late 50s, 20 years ago was like yesterday. And you look forward, and if I live to be another, if I live another 20 years, which is nothing, no, and die, no one's going to say he died so young. I mean, so after the meat of the middle comes the final stretch. And with the final stretch, you start realizing some things. And one of those things is that there's two types of decision making. I think this is something I've come to understand, and I think it's really important. And one of the things I really wanted to be sure to stress here is there's different type of decision making. You see, there's individual decisions you make in your life, you know, about a specific thing. You know, you run into a specific circumstance. And then there are collective decisions, you know, the big picture, big decisions, overarching decisions that are comprised of a lot of individual decisions. The sum, the average of individual decisions accumulate into a big decision. And when you understand that, you a lot of times realize that in a lot of ways you're fighting battles that are already fought. The war is over and you're still struggling with something, you know? In this final stretch in the marathon, now, for the first time really in this whole race, you're aware of the finish line. You're aware that you have this many miles roughly left. And the finish line is up there. You start thinking about where you're going to place. You know, how you're going to cross that finish line. You've put in the running. Now you become aware of the finish line. Prior, you were busy getting your stride and just putting out, you know, letting the miles clock off behind you, or you were just getting started off, whatever. Now, though, this is the part of your life where you become aware of the finish line. You want to finish. You want to finish out strong. I think this is a point of life where you become very, you really start reflecting on some things. Because the finish line, for our analogy of our marathon, is the grave. And we're all going to cross it. The older you get, people you knew earlier in your life have already crossed the finish line. You know, they died a little early. When you get in your life, I can guarantee if you're a younger person, by the time you're my age, there will be people that you went to school with that are already dead by the time you reach this point. Now, as you become reflective of these things, you become aware that you've made a collective decision in your life. If you have chosen to seek wisdom, knowledge, and understanding of the Lord, that finish line is going to look a lot different to you than if you're this person over here who's spent their life pursuing sin. We all know that these super rich, powerful people in this world are insane with this idea of transhumanism. They're going to transfer their consciousness into a computer. What is your consciousness? What they really mean is their soul. You know, when they turn out, they're working on these experiments that will allow them to transfer their consciousness into an AI program, and they're going to live forever. I would argue there really is no consciousness per se. There's a soul. And if you think, you know, and I'm sure the devil convinces them that they can somehow do this. You're not going to transfer your soul into a machine and live in this life forever. That's a lie. That's another one of those lies. But you can see why they're desperate. Because they can't help but to reflect too. And they've spent their life on what amounts to meaningless things. And now, the finish line is coming up. And it doesn't matter how much wealth you've accumulated. It's going to be taken away. You don't get to carry it across the finish line. You're going to lose everything. Your entire identity has been built around your money and your power. And you're going to lose all of that. It's all going to be gone. It's going to be straight. And there's nothing more frightening for these people than the idea of not having that. They can't imagine. It's the most terrifying. It is the sum of hell for them, not having any money. They'll be reduced to being like you, the commoners. Now, the overarching decision of your life, which has made up your life now, when you've made all of these smaller decisions, individual decisions, they make up the sum decision. So in other words, if the sum of your decisions in your life are to seek wisdom, knowledge, and understanding of the Lord and to know the Lord, that doesn't mean you hit the mark every time. Because I can assure you, you have sinned. There are times you made decisions that, looking back, you're like, shouldn't have done that. That doesn't matter. What makes the sum of your decision, what's the average? You know, the difference is the person pursuing sin, you know, they make those decisions to sin and they wake up the next day and they're like, well, that was great. I need to do that again. Or maybe I need to do more of that. When you've spent your overall life seeking the Lord, seeking His wisdom and knowledge and understanding and knowing Him, you sin and you wake up the next day and go, what the hell was I thinking? Why did I do that? Oh, shit, I really came up short. And so you try to correct that. This is what I commonly refer to so colorfully as working through your shit. And this is why Jesus made that sacrifice for us, so that we could work through it, because we have to work through it. This is a part of the maturing process. But your overall decision-making You know, that big decision, who you are, is made up of the sum of those individual decisions. You don't always get it right, but the overall theme is even when you got it wrong, you got up and tried to correct that, and you still got up and tried to seek that wisdom and knowledge and understanding of the Lord. Now, as you look at that finish line, this is going to be your strength. Look, death is scary because it's the unknown. You know, even as a Christian believer, the unknown is still going to be scary, even though you have confidence in the Lord and whatnot. It's still unknown. You know, I've used the illustration before. Somebody said, "Ben, you know, if you knew you were promised a great life in some foreign country that you've never been to before, you know, you're still going to be nervous going there because you've never been there before. You don't know that much about it. You've read about it, but the details are still pretty sketchy. You're not sure. In the kingdom of God, we know we are going to have work to do. We're going to have tasks assigned to us. What are those going to be? I don't know. We're not going to be lazying around on a beach sipping margaritas like so many Christians seem to think. You know, it's an eternal boomer retirement. You don't have to do anything in the kingdom of God. You can lay around, even though the Bible talks about, preaches against slothfulness over and over again. You have a lot of people, they imagine heaven is going to be, I'm going to kick back and sip margaritas and not do a damn thing for eternity. If that's your idea of what the kingdom of God is about, you're sorely mistaken. We have work we're going to do. What is that? I don't know. But I do know we are going to have purpose. As you look at that finish line, you look back and the big sum of your decision, all those little decisions have made the big decision. And this is who you are. And this is going to give you that strength to draw from as you look at the finish line. You say, you know, you're going to get nervous. You're going to get scared because it's the unknown. But you look back and say, okay, but this is who I am. I look at my whole life. You look at your whole life and you say, I have spent my life seeking wisdom, knowledge, and understanding of the Lord. And I can assure you, if you do that, you are going to have unique experiences, new, unique to you, to where things happen, wisdom comes to you, and understanding of things come to you, and you're going to understand that those didn't come from yourself. They came from God, and as such, you experience God. This is why the pursuit of this is so important, because during that pursuit, you will have times when you will experience the Lord, not coming in and micromanaging your life per se, but you will come to an understanding of things. You will see things work out in a way that you know there's no way that could have just happened. And you will understand to, on a certain level, that this is from God. And this will give you that strength at the end. Yes, you're nervous. Yes, it's scary, but you still look back and you can draw on that strength. You've had this experience. You've made, this is who you are. This is how you've spent all of that time in your life. For the sinner, for those who pursue sin in the world, not so much. All they have to draw on is more hedonism. There's more chasing after this and chasing after that. The Bible says the wages of sin is death, and everybody just equates that to where you're going in the afterlife, but it literally applies to life itself, physical, your body. When you reach that end stage, people you know who set their life on the homosexual path, it's a statistical reality that a lot lower percentage of those people are going to make it to the final stretch of life than those who don't. I mean, that's just a statistical reality due to a number of factors. You know, a lot of them aren't going to make it that far. In other words, they're going to die because that's just a fundamental aspect of that way of life. You know, so the wages of sin is death. Yes, that actually applies to this life as well. Worth noting is that when the devil is encouraging them in the adolescent stage of life to set off on this path, they don't tell them that. They don't tell them, oh, this is going to be great. You're going to have so many pleasures. It's going to be so wonderful. Oh, and by the way, you're going to die young. They don't ever tell them that. They promote this fantasy version on TV. Now, the strength of who you are, the collective decision of who you are, this helps you. This is why the Bible says, look, this is why the Bible says that, you know, the wisdom of the elders, you're supposed to be wise by the time you're old. And this is why, because your collective decisions pertaining to seeking the Lord, you know, they give you a strength. Does that make sense? If you're 20 years old, for instance, if you're 20 years old and you happen to go out to the bar and you're drinking and, you know, somebody's wife is sitting at the bar next to you, flirting with you, and then basically is like, you know, why don't we go to the no-tell motel and have a good time? As a 20-year-old, you're going to be a lot more tempted to do that. If you're in the final stretch of your life and that happens, you're going to be a lot more likely to go, thanks for the offer, darling, but I'm good. I believe I'm going to go home. Because you have that collective decision making. You have that experience. Your collective decision making says, yeah, no, I'm not going to do that. Because this is who I am. The non-believer is not going to have your strength to draw on as they face the finish line. As you get older, you will see people who their time comes. And if they know their time is coming, you know, they've got a terminal illness and they've spent their life on worldly things. I don't mean just being a, you know, they can be a decent person their whole life. You know, I'm not trying to paint every unbeliever as some unredeemable shithead or something. You know, there's people, you will know people in your life that they're pretty decent people, but they never had time for God. They're too busy making money, building their business, whatever. And they'll get that diagnosis of you've got 3 months, you've got 6 months to live, you got the cancer. And they'll fall apart. The sheer terror of it, you will see them do irrational things. You know, a lot of times these people will start trying to then make a deal with God. You know, maybe if they got money, they'll donate a bunch of money to the church and they think they're, you know, God will buy them some more time. It's an irrational behavior. And as a believer, you understand that's irrational, but you have to understand for that person, they're now desperate because they're staring at the finish line. And sadly, they're woefully unprepared. They didn't spend any time preparing and the time is gone. That brings us to the finish line, which goes back to the womb. Just as the baby would assume to stay in that nice, cozy womb, whether they like it or not, they're birthed into this world. Whether you like it or not, you cross that finish line. You have no choice. There's no dropping out of the race. You will cross that finish line one way or the other. And you're just like the birth out of the womb. You're birthed into the next life. And now, the books get balanced. Now we look at it. I think one of the most important things here is when you look at Jesus' parable of the three servants that got left with money, you know, different amounts of money to invest, what do you have to show for it? You know, you had the first guy that got a lot of money and he did well with it, invested it well, had a good return. Then you got the middle guy that had a less amount of money, but he did all right with it. He made a return. You had the third guy that just buried it. And then when the master came back, he dug it up and said, here's your shit back. The worldly things don't go with you over the finish line. You know, I mean, they just don't. But what you do take with you is your time. In other words, the investment's not gold, like in the parable. Obviously, God has no need for that. It's your time. You were given this time. What did you do with it? And, you know, there's no coloring it up. There's no excuse making. There's no justification. Here's your time. What do you have to show for it? You know, now, as long as you're alive on this earth, you can make the choice to try to turn towards the Lord and understand and know Him. You know, don't get me wrong. But if you wait until you're in the final stretch and then all of a sudden decide, well, I'm going to try to know Jesus, that's all well and good. But just because just from the fact that you have wasted all of this time, no matter how much you throw yourself into it, you're not going to have a lot to show for it. I'm sorry, I'm not discouraging people. You should still do that. If you've spent 63 years or whatever pursuing worldly nonsense and you realize that was stupid and now the finish line's coming up, I better try to understand Jesus and you're going to be saved and you're going to, you know, try to really earnestly, not trying to make a, you know, insincere deal with God. I'll turn to Jesus if you'll give me a little more time. But you sincerely going to try to turn to Jesus and turn your life around. And even if you're able to do that to an extent, understand that, you know, you're not going to have much to show for it because you're not getting that time back. You can't change the fact that you squandered that time. There's a finality to it. You're birthed into the next life and you either have knowledge, wisdom, and understanding and experience that you've gained, which you take with you into the next life, or you don't. When a baby is born, you can look and tell, oh, that's a healthy baby that's been born. Or you can look and say, that's a preemie. I hope it makes it. Much less a stillborn child. There are a lot of people stillborn into the next life, so as to speak. What you take with you into the next life is what you gained. How you spent that time, that investment, as in Jesus' parable, three servants, the investment is your time. What did you do with it? You know, and it's not like someone's going to stay. I mean, you just show up and it'll be obvious what you've got. You know, everyone can see what you brought with you. How mature are you? Everyone will be able to look. You can look and know at a glance how that person spent their time because of who they are, how mature they look. Are they ready to go straight to work? Are you ready to go straight to work in the kingdom of God because you've accumulated that? Or are you going to need some work here? You just barely made it in by the skin of your teeth and you ain't really ready for much. Or are you set to be cast into the fire because you squandered the time? You've nothing to show for it. Understand, the reason we have time is to establish who we are. When you cross that finish line, when you enter into the next life, that's who you are. You took the time and you spent it. This is what you came out with. One of the absurdities with the idea of reincarnation, one of the reasons I don't believe in it and I think it's silly, is there's no point to it. And God does not do pointless things. In other words, if you have a person that crosses over to the next life, they squandered all their time on sin and stupid worldly shit. And instead of casting them into the fire and just discarding them, they got a reset. They got a do-over. It wouldn't matter. It wouldn't matter how many do-overs, because that's who that person is. You know, in other words, what this life reveals to God is who you are. So it doesn't matter. You could be reincarnated 70 times and it wouldn't matter. Every single time you would show up after the finish line in the exact same position. Why? Because that is who you are. You would make, in other words, you're going to make the same decision over and over again. Somebody spends their whole life a certain way and then they're like, oh Lord, give me more time and I'll be different. You've had your whole life. That is who you are. Just because now you look at it and you're not really wild about who you are, those are still your decisions. You're still looking at the result of your collective decision making. Your life is the sum total of the decisions you've made. You can blame everybody else and blame this and blame that. And yeah, I mean, other people do things that have influence over your life and can set you on the wrong path. This is true. But at the end of the day, you still own those decisions. You know, somebody may have influenced you as a young person and set you on a bad path. That's true. But when you have your whole life of repeating, making that decision yourself, that person didn't follow you around for the rest of your life, goading you into making those decisions. That was all you. And you own it. Like it or not, the devil knows this. He doesn't play fair. Look, don't expect him to play fair. He doesn't. He'll hit you when you're at your weakest. He'll hit you with what you're weakest at. He'll hit you with that temptation that he's not going to hit you with temptations that you know, you don't care anything about. He knows what makes you tick. That's what he's going to hit you with. But look, at the end of the day, that's who you are. And that's what the judgment is when you under when you cross that finish line and your faith, look, you show up and every, you yourself know this is who you are. Are you going to be proud of that? It wouldn't matter. You're not going to get reincarnated because it wouldn't make any difference. You're still going to show up at the end of the day with the exact same results because that is who you are. You know, that just, wouldn't you like to show up being pretty satisfied with who you are? Yeah, you've had your ups and downs. You've definitely missed the mark. Everybody does. But that big decision, that sum total of your decision over your lifetime, you can confidently say, well, I've got something. I've got something. I've showed up with something. Anyway, we wound up running way long today. I hope that it is at least interesting enough for you to stick with us, you know, through the whole thing. I hope you got something out of it. So I appreciate you sticking with us. Appreciate you staying with us through the conversation. Again, I hope you got something out of it. And I hope I'll see you back here next week for the Parish of the Patriots.